Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the program, please press star, then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this program is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's program, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Melina, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Connect Workshop update on lymphoma treatment from the 2009 American Society of Hematology, or ASH, annual meeting. This has become a tradition between Cancer Care and the Lymphoma Research Foundation to offer this program, and we're delighted with your response to it. Now, today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care, the Lymphoma Research Foundation, and many other cancer organizations, and it really is because of that collaboration that we have been able to reach so many of you. We have on the call today over 1,300 participants, and you come from all over the United States. You come from large cities and small cities. You come from rural and frontier communities. You also come from suburban areas, and we have a number of international participants, really impressive, and I'm going to name the countries: Argentina, Australia, Bangladesh, Canada, Egypt, Germany, Guatemala, France, Netherlands, Singapore, Sweden, United Kingdom. So really from all over the world you come, and it's really a credit to you that you've chosen to spend the next hour with us. You're a group of information seekers. And I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials, there's information about our speakers, and there also is information about all of the different collaborating organizations as resources for you. And there is an evaluation form. And I would ask you to take a moment at the end of today's program and complete that evaluation form. When you think about it, who but each of you can best tell us the topics and the programs that you want us to offer? Indeed, this program is a credit to your asking us to do this each year. So tell us what you want, and we'll very much try to provide that for you. And this program today is supported by an unrestricted educational grant to Lymphoma Research Foundation from Cephalon Oncology, Genentech, Inc., and Millennium, the Takeda Oncology Company. And we really want to thank them for their support of this program. Now, we have wonderful speakers today, and I want to start by introducing our first speaker, Dr. John Leonard. Dr. Leonard is the Richard T. Silver Distinguished Professor of Hematology and Medical Oncology. He also is Professor of Medicine, Weill Cornell Medical College, Clinical Director, New York Cornell Center for Lymphoma and Myeloma. He also is Chief Lymphoma Myeloma Service, Associate Director for Clinical Research at the Weill Cornell Cancer Center. As you can see, he wears many hats, and we're delighted to have him with us today. Dr. Leonard?
Thank you very much, Carolyn, and thank you and everyone involved for setting up this program. It's really a pleasure to participate, and I know myself and the other speakers really enjoy these opportunities. So we have a lot to cover today. I'm going to spend a minute just very briefly on lymphoma background and then really focus on new developments from the American Society of Hematology meetings in several types of lymphoma, particularly the indolent lymphomas, most commonly follicular lymphoma, and CLL, or chronic lymphocytic leukemia. I'll also mention mantle cell lymphoma, which is a less common type of lymphoma that kind of straddles the indolent and the aggressive group. And then my colleagues will cover some of the other lymphoma subtypes a little bit later. So just to remind the audience, because I'm sure many people have different experience with lymphoma, either themselves or their friends or family members, there are over 60 types of lymphoma, and the biggest challenge is to know which type one is dealing with, because while there are some similarities in the treatment approaches, there are also some differences. And lymphomas commonly fall into two big categories, one type being indolent lymphoma, and those tend to be lymphomas that are managed what we call chronically, where often we treat people over many years and we manage it as a chronic disease that goes and comes over many years in many cases, but in some cases can get more difficult to treat over time. Whereas the aggressive lymphomas, which Dr. Press will speak more about a little bit later, often one goes through a course of treatment and the lymphoma goes into a remission and doesn't ever come back, although that's not always the case. In many cases, that is possible. So in the indolent lymphomas, many people who are facing those know that these tend to be diseases that we manage chronically, hopefully over many, many years, and in many cases, these can be diseases that people die with rather than die from, meaning that they are chronic diseases that can be managed and many people can live a normal life, although at times they can be challenging for certain people to deal with because they can get more difficult to treat in some cases over time. So in indolent lymphomas from the American Society of Hematology meetings, I think one of the big presentations that would all agree is very important was what we call a randomized trial where two different treatment regimens were compared. The quote-unquote standard treatment regimen was a regimen called CHOP plus rituximab, and many of you know this is an outpatient treatment that is given for many, many different types of lymphoma and is one of several treatment regimens for the indolent types of lymphoma. The comparison group was a group of patients treated with a drug called bendamustine or Treanda plus rituximab. So it's in essence comparing the four drugs, CHOP, to the one drug, bendamustine or Treanda, and both of the regimens were given with rituximab. And so this bendamustine, some of you may know, this is a chemotherapy drug that was developed in East Germany several years ago, back actually in the 60s, and was studied there and used for many different situations for many years in East Germany, and over the last 5 years or so has been more commonly used in the United States, and is actually approved in the United States for patients with CLL, chronic lymphocytic leukemia, and also for patients with indolent lymphoma that has become refractory to rituximab. And this is an outpatient chemotherapy. Its main side effects are low blood counts and some nausea, but importantly, there's no hair loss with bendamustine. And so this is a drug that's been used in many different situations, and the comparison and the key kind of new piece of data was this randomized trial that took 500 patients, just over 500 patients, treated in Germany. Most of the patients had follicular lymphoma or other indolent lymphoma subtypes, but a significant group of the patients also had mantle cell lymphoma. And the bottom line of this study, which randomly assigned half the patients to the CHOP-R and half the patients to the bendamustine-R, was twofold. Number one, the bendamustine rituximab treatment was better tolerated. The side effects as far as infections and low blood counts were easier, a bit easier than the CHOP group of patients. And in fact, with bendamustine, there's not hair loss, which is obviously a good and important thing for many people. The other interesting thing is that the bendamustine rituximab in this study seemed to work a bit better, meaning that people stayed in remission a bit longer. Now, CHOP and rituximab with these types of lymphoma tends to keep people in remission for at least several years. The group of patients treated with bendamustine rituximab seemed to stay in remission longer, both with follicular lymphoma, the other indolent lymphoma subtypes, and with mantle cell lymphoma. And so this suggests that the bendamustine rituximab combination may be better tolerated and may in fact be at least as effective and perhaps in some situations a bit more effective than the R-CHOP regimen. So I think this is important, and I spend kind of a good bit of my time in this discussion on this one particular abstract because I think it really will, for many people, call into question whether or not we should be saving this bendamustine drug for later in the course of treatment, whether or not we should start to be considering it earlier in the course of treatment for patients with follicular lymphoma and for some patients with mantle cell lymphoma. Now, many patients with mantle cell lymphoma are treated with intensive treatments. Some people get treated with R-CHOP, but many people are treated with things like stem cell transplants and with more intensive chemotherapy regimens. And so for some people, however, particularly older patients, the bendamustine rituximab combination may be a very important treatment to consider in mantle cell lymphoma as well as in follicular lymphoma and in chronic lymphocytic leukemia. So I don't think it's completely thrown R-CHOP off the landscape, certainly for these indolent types of lymphomas, but I think as patients with indolent lymphoma and with mantle cell lymphoma, whether it's early or later in the course of the disease, knowing at least that this drug, bendamustine plus rituximab, is an effective treatment that can be potentially useful, I think is worth bringing up with your doctor and considering both in follicular lymphoma, in some patients with mantle cell lymphoma, and in chronic lymphocytic leukemia. So that's the big study that I really wanted to focus on. I know we'll probably come back to some of these in the questions, but before I finish, I'm just going to spend a couple more minutes on a few other topics that I think people ought to know about. And that is really focusing on new drugs that are available for lymphoma. And many of these have been studied in the indolent lymphomas, in CLL, or in mantle cell lymphoma. And there were very promising and encouraging new data with these new drugs. And I think the thing for patients to keep in mind is not necessarily that these are drugs that they should get tomorrow, but that there are clinical trials with these new drugs available. And one should consider, if one needs therapy, pursuing or at least learning about these trials to see if one of these agents could be potentially useful. And I'm just going to go relatively quickly through a couple of these agents that have been presented at various meetings. So one whole class of drugs is what are called the novel anti-CD20 antibodies. So rituximab is an antibody treatment. These are immune proteins that fight lymphomas through various ways as they're injected into the blood and are given along with chemotherapy or by themselves. We have radioactive versions of rituximab in some ways that also go after the same target. Those are drugs called Bexxar and Zevalin. We also have new versions of these anti-CD20 antibodies. One of those is called ofatumumab, and the names are hard to keep track of. Another is called GA101. And these are drugs that are engineered in the laboratory to potentially work differently, perhaps better, perhaps not, than rituximab. And so these are engineered to potentially work with the immune system or bind to the lymphoma a little bit differently. And so there are some very encouraging studies presented at the hematology meeting suggesting that these may be useful drugs. In fact, one of these drugs, ofatumumab, was recently approved for patients with CLL, chronic lymphocytic leukemia. And these drugs are also being studied in various other forms of lymphoma. So I think that's something that people should kind of keep on their radar screen. Another drug, another two drugs that I think are of interest, one is a drug called Velcade or bortezomib. That is a class of drug called a proteasome inhibitor. This is a drug that's approved for mantle cell lymphoma. It's also used in other types of lymphoma, including follicular lymphoma. And there were various studies at this meeting incorporating it into new treatment regimens, or older treatment regimens, I should say. So, for instance, adding the bortezomib to CHOP chemotherapy, or to what's called CBP chemotherapy, or to the bendamustine drug that we talked about a little bit earlier. And so this combination is of great interest, and there are various studies that several of us on the call have participated in, the idea being combining, rather than combining a group of chemotherapy drugs, adding these new drugs to the older chemotherapy to try to make it work better. And so there were several studies looking at those issues. Another drug that's worth keeping in mind very briefly is a drug called Revlimid or lenalidomide. This is a cousin of thalidomide, which is a drug that is used in multiple myeloma. And this drug also is a pill that is used and is being studied, I should say, in various forms of lymphoma, both alone and in combination with rituximab and in combination with chemotherapy. So again, this is a biologic agent, not a chemotherapy drug, that works in different ways. And then finally, and I'll let the next speaker come in because I know we have a pretty packed agenda, there are a variety of new drugs that go after targets or switches in the lymphoma cells that are broken. And my colleague Dr. Vose may come back to this a little bit later, but basically there are a number of new drugs that are often pills that can target switches on the lymphoma cells that can either make the cells die off or make them more sensitive to chemotherapy. One category of these is drugs that hit a target called BCL2. Another is a category of drugs, a drug made by a company called Calistoga, which hits a target called PI3 kinase. And I know I'm going through these quickly. We may come back to them, some of them later. But the idea and the concept is not the details, just to know that there are clinical trials with new drugs that target these key pathways in the lymphoma cells that in some cases are well tolerated, the drugs themselves, and may either themselves kill the lymphoma cells or work with chemotherapy. So I think in the indolent lymphomas and mantle cell, and as you'll hear in the other lymphoma subtypes, I think there are lots of ways where we're making old drugs work better and developing new combinations that are really going to continue to provide people with new options. And ultimately, I think we'll start to use them in combination as part of initial therapies rather than waiting downstream when the standard treatments aren't working anymore. So I think with that, I'll stop, and again, we'll come back to some of these issues. I apologize that we have to kind of go quickly, but we'll come back to some of these issues, I'm sure, in the question session.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Leonard, for just an outstanding and very wonderful comprehensive view, and to start us off, thank you. And I know there'll be questions for you. Our next speaker is Dr. Oliver Press. Dr. Press is member of Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center. He's recipient of the Dr. Penny E. Peterson Memorial Chair for Lymphoma Research. He also is professor of medicine, University of Washington, co-chair NCI Lymphoma Steering Committee. He too wears many hats. And I'm going to turn the program over to Dr. Press.
Thank you very much. I'm going to talk about three topics, three different types of lymphomas. First, I'm going to talk about aggressive lymphomas, then I'll talk about Hodgkin lymphomas, and finally, I will say a few words about T-cell lymphomas. First of all, aggressive lymphomas are the prototype of highly curable lymphomas among the non-Hodgkin's lymphomas, and the most common of the aggressive lymphomas is called diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. This particular type of lymphoma makes up about 30% of all of the lymphomas in the United States. The current standard of care involves giving a chemotherapy regimen CHOP, which you heard about a little bit from Dr. Leonard, along with a monoclonal antibody, rituximab or Rituxan. And usually this regimen is given as an outpatient every 21 days for 6 to 8 cycles. And the majority of patients with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma can be cured when given this regimen. However, some patients are not, and if they are not cured with R-CHOP, then there's a second chance to cure the patient, giving a second-line regimen, often a chemotherapy regimen called RICE, followed by an autologous stem cell transplant. So that's the standard of care. And there were several interesting talks at this year's hematology meeting trying to fine-tune our approach and to cure even more patients with aggressive lymphomas. One of the interesting studies was presented by a Dr. Delarue, who reported on a study of about 200 patients from France. And they had tested a shortened regimen of the CHOP regimen. Rather than giving R-CHOP every 21 days, there are some doctors around the room who believe, around the world, who believe that if you shorten the regimen to every 14 days, a so-called R-CHOP 14, that a higher percentage of patients might be cured. And so to test this hypothesis, they did a randomized study in which half the patients got R-CHOP every 14 days, and half of them got R-CHOP every 21 days. And this study was done in patients all over the age of 60. And to the surprise of many, the standard R-CHOP 21 seemed to be just as good as the R-CHOP 14 and had significantly less toxicity than the shortened regimen. So at this point in time, I believe that the standard of care should remain R-CHOP 21, that is given every 3 weeks, at least until other studies and more data are available, because the standard regimen had less toxicity. Now, I have to say there was a little bit of debate about this because the growth factor support that is necessary with the 14-day regimen wasn't given exactly the way that the regimen was designed. But overall, I believe that the results are very compelling. The second item I will talk to about aggressive lymphomas is the use of positron emission tomography or PET scanning. The standard way of imaging lymphomas for years has been CAT scanning or computed tomography, where you measure lymph nodes according to their size, and big lymph nodes are assumed to be lymphoma, whereas PET scanning looks at their metabolic activity. And with PET scanning, hot lymph nodes are assumed to be active disease. And there is a lot of research right now assessing the role of PET scanning after two cycles of chemotherapy to identify those patients that are going to do well with standard R-CHOP. And on the other hand, if the PET scan is still hot and abnormal after two cycles, then it may be that switching therapy at that point is a good idea. There's a lot of debate about this approach right now. There were two studies presented, and I would say at this point we need further data, because those two studies, one said that it was a good approach, and the other did not find it. So I think this is a very controversial area. I think PET scanning is definitely useful at the beginning of treatment, at the end of treatment, but in the middle, after two cycles, it remains controversial. I'm going to move now to talk a little bit about Hodgkin lymphoma. That's the second of the three topics I'll address. And Hodgkin lymphoma is, again, a highly curable lymphoma. And I think one of the most exciting developments in Hodgkin lymphoma is that our cure rates are so high that we are actually able to cut down on the amount of treatment that we give to patients without lowering the cure rates. And so there was a very important study presented by Professor Diehl from Germany about early stage Hodgkin lymphoma. He looked at four different treatments, and they involved various numbers of the ABVD chemotherapy regimen and various amounts of radiation. And what he found was that the easiest regimen, the one that had only two cycles of ABVD and the lowest dose of radiation, 20 gray of radiation, was actually just as good as the more intense, higher dose treatment approaches. And so this is good news for patients, I think, because it means that we can give fewer cycles of chemotherapy than we used to, and we can give lower doses of radiation. This will result in less toxicity for patients, both immediately during treatment and also later in life. There should be a less chance that that other types of cancer will develop later in life, or that there might be heart disease or lung disease later in life using the lower amounts of chemotherapy and the lower dose of radiation. So I think that that's a very encouraging development. There also are several new drugs that are coming out that look very exciting. One of the very most exciting one is a drug called SGN-35. This is a monoclonal antibody conjugated or attached to a chemotherapy agent, and it binds to and selectively kills the Hodgkin cells and not the normal cells in the body. And it, up until now, has been used mainly in patients who have recurred after frontline ABVD, and it seems to be extremely active and is a very exciting drug. There is also activity for other groups of agents. Panobinostat is a new drug that looks very exciting. Temsirolimus and everolimus, lenalidomide, all those drugs had talks at ASH that were extremely encouraging. Because time is short, I'm going to move to my third and final topic and just say a word about T-cell lymphomas. Most of the non-Hodgkin's lymphomas are derived from B lymphocytes, which are originally produced in the bone marrow, but about 15%, 10 to 15% of all non-Hodgkin's lymphomas come from thymus-derived lymphocytes, so-called T-cell lymphomas. And there are two main types that I'll mention today. One is so-called peripheral T-cell lymphomas, in which the lymphoma is mainly in lymph nodes, and the other are cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, where the lymphoma is mainly in the skin. And these lymphomas, particularly the peripheral T-cell lymphomas are somewhat more difficult to treat and to cure than the B-cell lymphomas. CHOP has been the standard of care for peripheral T-cell lymphomas, but doesn't produce as good a results as in the B-cell lymphomas. Fortunately, there are now new drugs emerging, and two of those were discussed at the meeting. Well, there were several of them presented at the meeting, but particularly pralatrexate, which is now approved in this country for treating peripheral T-cell lymphoma. And at the meeting, it was also shown that this works also in cutaneous T-cell lymphomas. And there also was a drug called belinostat that showed activity both in the peripheral T-cell lymphomas and the cutaneous T-cell lymphomas. Well, there are many other exciting developments from ASH, but I think because of my time allotment, I'm going to stop there, and we will move on to Dr. Vose, I believe.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Press, for excellent, really outstanding presentation, and I know we'll have lots of questions for you as well. And our next speaker is Dr. Julie Vose. Dr. Vose is the Newman M. and Mildred E. Harris Professor. She's Chief Section of Hematology Oncology. She's also Professor of Medicine, University of Nebraska Medical Center. We're delighted to have her with us today. And as you can see, all of our speakers wear many hats, and that's why we have them with us today. They know so much. So, Dr. Vose.
Well, thank you very much, Carolyn. What I'm going to talk about is just to kind of follow up on a couple of things the other speakers have discussed. And one of the big areas I'd like to discuss is some of these new targeted agents. Dr. Leonard mentioned earlier, a lot of the new medicines that we have for available for patients, mostly on clinical trials, are medications that target specific pathways in lymphoma cells. And these pathways are really what keeps a lymphoma cell alive, and we're trying to disrupt or target those to try to see if we can either directly kill the lymphoma cell or make the lymphoma cells more susceptible to some of our standard agents, such as chemotherapy. And that's really where most of the new research is going. So a lot of these new targeted agents are beginning to be in early clinical trials, and there were several agents that were looked at in small clinical trials and presented at the American Society of Hematology meetings. I'm just going to mention a couple of those. One I'd like to mention is an oral what's called JAK2 inhibitor, and that was presented by Dr. Yunus from MD Anderson. And that's a medication that's an oral medication and looked like it had some pretty good activity for patients with multiple different types of lymphomas, mantle cell lymphoma, follicular lymphoma, small lymphocytic lymphoma. And it had relatively low toxicity as well. So this is a type of agent that we're looking at in very early clinical trials to try to see if it has activity, and then hopefully we'll be able to look at that in additional patients to see if we can see which types of lymphomas perhaps this has the best activity in. Again, there's several other pathways that were being looked at, pathways that keep the lymphoma cells alive, such as the PI3 kinase. That's another pathway that's very active in lymphoma cells that we're trying to disrupt, as well as the BCL2 pathway. And there's a number of different agents, either oral or in-the-vein agents, that try to disrupt those pathways. I think what you're going to be seeing over the next several years are clinical trials trying to look at these different agents to see in which types of lymphomas this can be helpful with. The other areas that are very active are, in addition to oral targeted agents, there's also agents that are in the vein, as we talked about earlier, that are perhaps the next generation of the rituximab-type molecules. So these would be agents that also, in some cases, attack the CD20 that's on the surface of the lymphoma cell, such as rituximab does, but they are agents that perhaps have been actually genetically changed to make them a better antibody, if you will, to target the lymphoma cell. So these would be mostly human or humanized antibodies that perhaps have better activity. Right now, they're just being looked at in very early clinical trials to see if they have activity, mostly in patients that have already failed or have relapsed after the rituximab antibody. Also, there's other antibodies that target different molecules on the surface of lymphoma cells, such as anti-CD19 or anti-CD22. And these are often also attached to either chemotherapy drugs or, in some cases, what's called an immunoconjugate, which is a way to try to actually target medications, chemotherapy, or poisons to the lymphoma cell without causing so much side effect for the patient. So I think one theme of all of these types of treatments are that we're trying to target specifically the lymphoma cell and to decrease the side effects that the patients may have. Many of our chemotherapy drugs, of course, attack not only the lymphoma cells but also the normal tissues and cause a lot of the side effects that patients have from the treatment. So I think that's really one big theme to take away from this is targeting specifically the lymphoma cell, decreasing the side effects, and trying to also specially design some of our drugs so that they are helpful with specific patients or specific types of lymphomas, and perhaps we can more wisely choose the therapies for individual patients. Last area I'd like to talk about is why clinical trials are so important. Many of our treatments that we use today we only have available because patients in the past have participated in clinical trials. And of all of our treatments really start with research. So that's where clinical trials become very important so that we can see if these new agents who sometimes appear to be promising in some of our early studies in test tubes, we have to take them eventually if they look promising into patient clinical trials to make sure that they are promising to fight the lymphoma. Right now, only about 3% of all adult cancer patients participate in clinical trial. This compares to about 80 or 90% of children who have cancer who participate in clinical trials. Obviously, to be able to take these new therapies to further patients, we really need to try to improve and increase the patients that participate in clinical trials so we can see if these new drugs really do have improvement in activity. There are several advantages for patients who do participate in clinical trials. You have very close follow-up, usually by physicians who specialize in that specific area, such as the three of us that are on the call today. We specialize specifically in taking care of patients that have lymphoma. The drugs are often provided for you on clinical trials at free of charge if it's a non-approved drug. You have access to the drugs years earlier than other patients may have, and so a lot of these new promising drugs are only available in clinical trials. And in cancer clinical trials, there's no placebo or inactive drugs that are given. It's only given active drugs versus a standard of care treatment. Many states do have laws that actually protect patients when they participate in clinical trials, that the standard treatments or standard of care tests do need to be paid for. And there's also legislation in the new Health Care Act that would also help with that. So I definitely would encourage participating in clinical trials, not only for your own benefit, but also for helping patients in the future. And I think I'll turn that back over to Carolyn to continue our discussion.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Vose, and actually very much for actually highlighting the importance of clinical trials. And I know there'll be more questions during the Q&A. Thank you. Excellent presentation. Our next speaker is Brian Tomlinson. Brian is Director of Patient Education, Lymphoma Research Foundation, and Brian and Jen Mills at the Lymphoma Research Foundation have played a very critical role in actually planning this program today. So I now turn the program over to Brian, who will say a few words about the Lymphoma Research Foundation. Brian?
Well, thank you, Carolyn, and thank you to Cancer Care for the partnership not only on this call but on all the calls that the Lymphoma Research Foundation offers to patients. And a huge thank you on behalf of the Foundation to Drs. Leonard, Press, and Vose for their excellent and informative presentations. On behalf of the Lymphoma Research Foundation, we would also like to thank Cephalon Oncology, Genentech, and Millennium, the Takeda Oncology Company, for supporting this program. The Lymphoma Research Foundation is the nation's largest lymphoma-focused voluntary health organization devoted exclusively to funding lymphoma research and providing patients and professionals with critical information on the disease. Our mission is to eradicate lymphoma and serve those touched by this disease. The Lymphoma Research Foundation provides a comprehensive series of programs and services for lymphoma patients, survivors, and loved ones, including our Lymphoma Helpline and Clinical Trials Information Service, where our trained public health and mental health staff can assist you in your search for clinical trials. A Lymphoma Support Network, which is a national one-to-one peer support program that matches lymphoma patients or caregivers with volunteers who have had similar lymphoma-related experience. A variety of print and online publications and newsletters, which include our comprehensive disease booklets for non-Hodgkin lymphoma, Hodgkin lymphoma, and coming out soon, CLL/SLL. We have a variety of disease and treatment-specific fact sheets, which are 1 to 2 pages in length, which are also available in print and online format, and informational newsletters. The Foundation provides a series of webcast programs throughout the year on specific types of lymphoma treatment options and support topics. We currently offer over 70 webcasts on our website, and we'll be releasing 20 new programs this week. In addition to all of these programs and services, the Foundation provides in-person patient conferences on the regional and national levels. If you'd like information about any of these programs or more information about the Foundation, I encourage you to please contact a member of our helpline staff by calling 800-500-9976 or visiting our website at lymphoma.org. And again, on behalf of the Foundation, thank you to Cancer Care, the speakers, and the sponsors, and all of you for being with us today. Thank you, Carolyn.
Well, thank you very much, Brian, and thanks for really highlighting the importance of the organization, the Lymphoma Research Foundation, as a wonderful resource for all the participants on the call. So if you haven't called them, do, because it's just a great resource. And our next speaker is Richard Dickens. Rick is an oncology social worker, and he's program coordinator of blood cancers, project coordinator of mind-body program Cancer Care, and he's going to tell you a bit about cancer care. Rick?
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you, Drs. Leonard, Press, and Vos, for your thoughtful presentations. I always look forward to being on these Connect workshops when you are one of the presenters. I always appreciate what you have to say. And Brian and Lymphoma Research Foundation for the wonderful work you are doing there. A diagnosis of cancer is difficult for patients and those who love and work with them. Cancer Care has over 40 master's degree social workers specializing in oncology who are here to help you resolve some of the conflicts that might arise and ultimately help you find some peace. Now, this can be emotional peace through one of our many professionally facilitated telephone, online, and face-to-face groups, or in a counseling intervention with one of our oncology social workers. Peace might be some respite from financial concerns through one of our many financial grants or one of our cancer care fact sheets. And finally, knowledge and peace of mind can come through one of our educational workshops like today, or guidance on how to navigate the complicated world of cancer treatment, healthcare communication, understanding insurance claims, or additional community-based resources that you might not have been aware of. Tips that can guide you along this process: do your research. The Internet is a good place to start, but there are also many helpful organizations, such as Cancer Care, that can guide you through this process. Becoming a knowledgeable consumer will go a long way toward giving you a sense of control and making you an active member in your treatment decisions. Take your time. Saying "I need a day to think about this" can give you an opportunity to catch your breath and get feedback from loved ones and from other resources. And finally, speak up. Remember, your doctor and oncology team can't treat a problem if you don't make them aware of it. At Cancer Care, we can't promise to solve all of the concerns that arise out of a cancer diagnosis and treatment, but with over 60 years in the ever-changing field of oncology, we are dedicated to trying one patient and one family at a time. You can reach us on or see our services on our website, www.cancercare.org, where you can also sign up for online groups, or call us at 1-800-813-HOPE, or email us at info@cancer.org, and a social worker would follow up with you. I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much, Rick, and thanks for the excellent presentation. And now we have time for questions. We have a lot of time for questions. I'm going to ask Melina to explain to you how to queue up for questions. And I just want to say up front, if we don't get your question, please call either Lymphoma Research Foundation or Cancer Care, and we'll be happy to take your questions. Melina, could you explain how to queue up for questions, and we'll start.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Our first question comes from Allison S.
I'm interested in specific mouth care besides saline wash.
Well, thank you for that question. Excellent question. Dr. Leonard, could you address that?
Well, the question relates to mouth care. I'm guessing this relates to chemotherapy, related mouth sores. Sometimes people, so the first issue is that if someone has a problem with their mouth, when they're on treatment or when they're not on treatment, obviously knowing what's causing it is an important aspect of things. So certainly certain treatments can give mouth pain or inflammation, and there are a variety of different either over-the-counter medications, one called Biotin we tend to use a good bit, but there are others that can help with those issues. Sometimes physicians and others can prescribe something that's commonly termed magic mouthwash, which is a little bit of a cocktail of a couple of different medications. They often include something called lidocaine, which is a little bit of a numbing medicine. And there are various doctors have kind of their own little concoctions that they use. I think it's also important to keep in mind that patients on treatment for lymphoma, particularly those getting chemotherapy and on other medications, can sometimes get infections in their mouth. So you want to make sure that there's not a dental problem that could be giving mouth pain, and sometimes yeast infections, something called thrush, which is a yeast infection that can sometimes happen with certain medications or antibiotics. And that requires a specific treatment against the yeast. So I think it's worth speaking with one's doctor or nurse or other healthcare provider, because knowing exactly what's causing the pain will go a long way to giving the right management of it.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Our next question. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Kathy B.
Yes, thank you, doctors. This is for Dr. Press. I was diagnosed with angioimmunoblastic T-cell lymphoma in March of 2003, went through R-CHOP, relapsed, went through RICE, relapsed, had an auto transplant, relapsed, was then on cyclosporine for about 2.5 years, went off that July of 2007. My question is, I'm relatively stable now. I still have elevated IgMs and IgM lambda monoclonal gammopathy. So I'm wondering your thought on that, and are there any new drugs specifically out for angioimmunoblastic T-cell? Thank you.
Thank you for that excellent question. I'm going to ask Dr. Press to address in a general way, and then we'll ask you to take it back to your treating healthcare team. Dr. Press?
Sure. Well, it certainly sounds like you've had many of the standard and good treatments for this disease. There are several additional drugs that have come out. One that's been newly approved this year that I mentioned was pralatrexate, is a drug that for many T-cell lymphomas can have benefit. Then there are other drugs. Gemcitabine might have some value in this particular situation. Some of the histone deacetylase inhibitors that are coming out are worth a trial. On the other hand, if you were stable, it may not be necessary to initiate therapy immediately. There also is the option, at least in some centers and some circumstances in relapsed T-cell lymphomas, to do a non-myeloablative allogeneic transplant, that is a so-called mini-transplant, in patients who have had prior autologous transplants that haven't worked. So that's something that's commonly done at our center, at least.
Excellent. Thank you. Our next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Elaine S.
Yes, I'm wondering if there is any new research or new statistics on rituximab as maintenance.
Thank you for that question, Dr. Leonard.
Well, rituximab, which again is the anti-CD20 antibody that's given for many types of B-cell lymphomas, is commonly given either with chemotherapy at the same time or by itself, particularly in the indolent lymphomas, where it's often given for 4 weeks in a row. So there have been a number of studies that have looked at the idea of what's called maintenance therapy, and that is the patient gets the rituximab therapy or they get chemotherapy with rituximab, and then while the disease is in remission, perhaps 3 months later, 4 months later, 6 months later, getting additional doses of rituximab to try to keep people in remission longer. And in many different situations, and this is a complicated topic, I'm sure this is an issue that many people are interested in because it comes up a lot. In the indolent lymphomas, there is good evidence that with rituximab maintenance, people can stay in remission longer. The question comes up is that necessarily better than waiting, and if the disease comes back without the maintenance treatment, just giving rituximab when the disease comes back, in other words, when it's needed, as opposed to being as a preventative. So there are several studies that have looked at that, and I think my advice would be that one should speak with one's doctor about that, because it depends a little bit on the type of lymphoma, particularly for the large cell lymphoma. That is not, rituximab maintenance is not particularly useful in the studies we have thus far. In mantle cell lymphoma, it's a little less useful as well, although it sometimes is done. In the follicular lymphomas, this is sometimes done, and there are several studies that are ongoing, one in particular called the PRIMA study, which we're waiting on the results. Hopefully early next year we'll have some results from. So the bottom line is that in some cases, rituximab maintenance can keep people in remission longer. The question is that necessarily better than using it when it's needed, and is it necessarily going to benefit people in the long term, meaning 5, 10, 15 years down the line? And that remains an open question. It's also important to keep in mind that the downside of rituximab maintenance can be that people over time can develop some suppression of the immune system, which is not usually an issue with rituximab when we give it for a short period of time, but when we give it for a longer period of time, there can be some increased incidence of infections and other complications. So balancing all that out, I think at this point today is an individualized decision that is appropriate in some settings, but perhaps in other settings isn't necessarily warranted. And so I would encourage people, and this comes up a lot, to speak with one's doctor about the pros and cons of the individual situation.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Thank you. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Larry A.
The occurrence of transformed lymphoma in indolent patients is a significant issue. In patients that have had previous exposure to
Adriamycin.
And is there any alternative for treatment for such patients should they have transformation?
Dr. Vos, Dr. Lennon, do you want to address that?
Sure, I can address it.
Yes, Dr. Vos.
There are a number of different agents that do have some activity in patients that have transformed lymphoma. A lot of the chemotherapy agents other than adriamycin can be used, such as some of the agents we used for patients with relapse lymphoma, such as ifosfamide, etoposide, steroid agents, cisplatinum agents, and then a lot of the new types of therapies we talked about today can also sometimes have activity in patients with transformed lymphoma. So you really need to probably look at each individual situation, and that's where an individual plan needs to be made for that person based upon what their prior therapy is. But there's definitely a lot of new agents, and sometimes if it's just in one location, radiation therapy can also be given as well. So the plan really needs to be individualized for the person.
So, Larry, we encourage you to take this information from today's program and take it back to your treating healthcare team and work out the best plan that would be tailored to you. Thank you. Thanks for the excellent question. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Mark A.
Yes. Can you please tell me what intermediate non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is and what is its standard treatment?
Well, you probably mean intermediate grade non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. That's sort of old terminology that's not used anymore. But in the working formulation, they divided lymphomas into low grade, what we now call indolent, intermediate grade, which is what we now call aggressive, and high grade, which is highly aggressive. And intermediate grade, if that's what you're referring to, refers to lymphomas like diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. And that's how I began my segment. And R-CHOP is generally the standard of care for intermediate grade or aggressive lymphomas.
Excellent. Thank you. Our next question.
Our next question comes from Jerry C.
Yes. One question was answered. I'll ask anyway. Indolent, what does that mean?
Oh, excellent question. Thank you, Jerry. Okay. Dr. Leonard, could you say a bit about that?
So indolent lymphomas are the lymphomas that are what we tend to call chronic lymphomas. And these are lymphomas that often over time come and go with treatment or sometimes even without treatment. So these are lymphomas that often are slow growing and often don't need any treatment at certain points, but sometimes do need treatment and are generally treated in a variety of different ways, usually chemotherapy and or rituximab treatment, but there are a variety of the new drugs that we've talked about. the general approach to indolent lymphomas is not that we're expecting that we give one round of treatment and it goes away and never comes back, although sometimes they can stay away for many years for some people. But with the indolent lymphomas, these tend to go up and down over time, and people can live a very, very long time, and often it's something that they live their whole life with, and it happens to be kind of a hitchhiker along the way, although sometimes it can be, for some people, more of a problem. So these are lymphomas that people tend to live many years with, as opposed to lymphomas where the expectation is you're going to go through treatment and it goes away and never comes back. So there are many, many different types of treatment for indolent lymphoma. The other names that have been used for certain types of indolent lymphoma include follicular lymphoma, which is the most common type of indolent lymphoma, although there are several others, including a type called marginal zone lymphoma and a type called small lymphocytic lymphoma or chronic lymphocytic leukemia or CLL. Those are all in the indolent or low-grade or tend to be slow-growing lymphomas.
Thank you. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Ruth A.
Yes, I wanted to find out about MALT lymphoma and the marginal zone lymphomas and if there have been new things about them. Also, with MALT lymphoma, for people who have had little or no treatment, are there alternative therapies that seem to work because these come and go? Like massage, like different kinds of things like that, rather than medication or chemo or rituximab.
Thank you for that question, Ruth. Thank you. Dr. Press, do you want to address that?
Okay. Well, marginal zone lymphoma is a category of diseases, and there are several different type of marginal zone lymphomas. MALT lymphoma stands for mucosa-associated lymphoid tissue lymphoma, and the most common form presents in the stomach. It's often in association with a bacterium in the stomach, and often just treating with a triple antibiotic regimen will get rid of the bacteria and the lymphoma that results from it. And so antibiotic therapy can work quite well for stomach MALT lymphomas. And there can be MALT lymphomas that occur other places, in the skin, around the eye, in the salivary glands, and there are conflicting reports about whether antibiotics work in those locations or not. If the antibiotics don't work and it's a localized process, which is often the case, then radiation therapy is exquisitely effective. And in the stomach MALT lymphomas that don't respond to antibiotics, almost 100% can be cured with local radiation. If it's a MALT or a marginal zone lymphoma that's spread to other places in the body, then it's managed with treatments almost identical to the other indolent lymphomas that John Leonard was talking about. Rituxan is an excellent choice. There's been a study with chlorambucil showing a lot of benefit. RCVP can work. So there are many different treatment options. I'm not aware of any effective alternative or allopathic treatments, however. And I might ask John if he has any additional things he wants to add since he discussed the indolent lymphomas.
No, I think just the issue that was alluded to as far as that small group where treating with antibiotics in certain types, certainly not all types, but in certain types of the marginal zone lymphomas, that can potentially be helpful. I would just also add, and Carolyn, perhaps you can reiterate for people, for some of the questions that come up with I think it's very important for everyone to know the basics of their type of lymphoma that they're dealing with. And unfortunately, we don't have time to go into that much detail, but I would encourage everyone on the line to know which type of lymphoma you personally are dealing with, or your family member, if it's a family member. And in fact, I'm sure that the folks on the line from Cancer Care can direct the Lymphoma Research Foundation has some very nice books that can, and as well as the website, that can really direct people to very specific information to say, you know, what is this type of lymphoma all about? And I would encourage people to take the time to do that, because unfortunately we don't have time to give the details here of all of these types. But given that there are 60 types, these are very good books that are available that I think can be helpful to many people. So I would encourage people to avail themselves of those resources.
We make an excellent point. I think that we'd want everyone to actually, definitely the Lymphoma Research Foundation has wonderful materials, fact sheets, booklets on all the different types of lymphoma. And, you know, even if your physician has gone over some of that information with you, it is nice to have a pamphlet in front of you as well and to revisit it over and over again. Because every time you read it and look at it, you will retain more and more information. And sometimes you do have to look at this over and over again with more and more. So I appreciate your questions. They're excellent. And so please do use us, both of these organizations and all the others, as a resource. And also, you know, be very clear about exactly what type of lymphoma you have and its particular treatment. And you can sit down with your healthcare team, the physician in the office, the oncology nurse, to really get a clear sense of that once you've had a chance to look at these booklets and have that other information.
Carolyn, this is Rick, and I wonder if I could take a moment just to address the issue of alternative therapies. I developed our Mind, Body, Spirit project at Cancer Care, and I teach in meditation, imagery, and vibration as therapy grounded in diaphragmatic breath exercise. But as many of us know, alternative therapies incorporate acupuncture, tai chi, herbs, things like that. What I like over the years is that alternative therapies, it was complementary, then alternative, then complementary alternative. More often than not, many leading institutions have integrative medicine centers now. And because we know the efficacy of the Western treatments, it is very important oftentimes to work with your doctor, but that there really is a long history with these other modalities. And they can be very effective. Some of the studies that I have seen have not necessarily showed them to be more efficacious and help with the disease directly, but they have showed that people who do integrate some of these integrative therapies or modalities have better quality of life and are able to address some of their symptom side effects and issues in a much more manageable way. It's also very important, if you do any of those, to share it with your healthcare team and your doctor, especially if it's vitamins or herbs or things like that. But it is a huge business, and many, many people do use it very effectively in conjunction with the Western treatment.
So I think we want to very much encourage you to talk with your doctor about anything you're doing, anything you're considering doing. That's really very important, because we really want you to have the very best quality of life. And, you know, this is a major meeting that our speakers have attended, and they're bringing back the most up-to-date information for you to have. So our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Jerry Kay.
Yes, there's been no discussion about vaccines. Are they... are vaccines kind of out in terms of a treatment for indolent lymphoma?
There have been three large studies that have been done looking at vaccines for follicular lymphoma in the U.S., and two of those studies were definitely negative studies in that the vaccine was not more beneficial. The third study that was presented this past year at the ASCO meeting was one that did show some benefit in a subgroup of patients for follicular patients receiving the vaccine. However, it is not currently open or available for clinical trials in the U.S., and we're trying to reevaluate if this technique is really appropriate. I think that's probably going to need further clinical trials and different alternative ways to give the vaccine or to manufacture the vaccine to be positive. So right now it's not really available for patients, unfortunately.
And our next question. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Joni D.
Yes, my question is that when do you stop waiting and watching? I was originally diagnosed with follicular lymphoma. In the meantime, I took my pathology, my bone marrow biopsy, to City of Hope and UCLA, and they changed it to splenic marginal zone lymphoma. Originally, I was ordered on CHOP-R immediately, and I chose not to. In the meantime, I waited and started doing some of my own herbs and enzyme therapy, and I went into spontaneous remission. So
okay,
what
well,
am I watching for on blood
okay.
stats? When do they stop waiting and watching?
Well, Joni, that's an excellent question. It's our last question for the call. I'm going to ask Dr. Lennon to address that question, please.
So that's a great question. In the indolent lymphomas, many patients go on what's called watch and wait, where they don't necessarily need treatment right away and are observed without treatment. And that's something that's very surprising for people sometimes when they're diagnosed, that you're diagnosed with a cancer and that you can actually watch it and not do anything about it, at least immediately, other than watching it closely. And that's something that's very different than dealing with many other types of cancers where people are used to treating it right away. So in many indolent lymphomas, some patients can go, and the average patient who goes on watch and wait in some studies can go on watch and wait for several years. And so the question, and there's little evidence in several different studies that delaying therapy for many types of indolent lymphoma, if the patient is doing well, feeling well, the lymph nodes are not very big, and very big is several centimeters in size, although that's open to some debate and opinion. And if the blood work is all good, many patients can be watched for a period of time. And, in fact, about a third of the time, indolent lymphomas shrink on their own. And so watch and wait or observation without treatment is often an option for patients with indolent lymphoma, both when they're diagnosed or sometimes when the disease comes back. So there's not absolute criteria for when starting treatment, and I would say that there are plenty of times when the three of us on the phone may see a patient and even could look at the same patient and have different opinions as to whether or not it's time to treat or not. So there's not black and white criteria. I think what most people would think of as criteria are if the patient has symptoms, so the lymphoma is causing pain or causing other problems that need to be addressed, and therefore the treatment will make the patient feel better. If there are blood count abnormalities that are causing problems with respect to anemia, low blood counts, or other problems with the blood counts, or if the lymph nodes are rapidly growing over time, where there's a big change in the size. But at the end of the day, I don't know that there are very strong criteria, and many times it's an individualized decision where for some patients and some doctors, small changes and small lymph nodes may be appropriate to treat, and in other people, bigger changes and bigger lymph nodes may be still observed over time. So it's a very much of a judgment area and hard to actually set a hard and fast rule. So I think the key thing is to speak with one's doctor as to whether or not watch and wait might be appropriate and what are the sorts of reasons to do treatment when the time comes.
Well, I want to thank all of our speakers for just being extraordinary, and I want to thank all of you who queued up and asked questions, which really helped us to elaborate on important points during this call. I want to thank our supporters for this program, and I also want to thank the Lymphoma Research Foundation for partnering with us on this program, making it possible. Now, most importantly, you know, this isn't a one-hour education program, and we do not want anyone to leave this program feeling that you're alone. We want you to now feel that you're part of a community of support. And in this particular program, we want you to feel very comfortable to call Cancer Care or the Lymphoma Research Foundation for any questions that you may have. We are here to help you. Our staff are here to take your questions. I know there are many of you who wanted to ask a question. Call us. We're here for you. We are all simply a telephone call away, or you can visit our websites as well. I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the program. You may now disconnect and have a wonderful day.